You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, squishy and squeezable squabbling squires. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 108, and of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and we are your practically praiseworthy, prancy pranksters.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm the squishiest of all, Chris.
And, well, let's jump into our first general trivia segment. Pop quiz, hotshot. And you guys have your barnyard buzzers. I have a random Trivial Pursuit card from the box. Here we go. Blue wedge for geography. What San Francisco bookstore was founded by beat poet Lawrence Ferlinghetti? Oh, wow. You guys all...
City Lights.
What's special about the bookstore?
It's just they're like the landmark bookstore Kerouac. Of the beat generation. Yeah, yeah, Ginsberg and Kerouac and Ferlinghetti.
Near the strip clubs.
Interesting. All right. Mm-hmm. Pink wedge for pop culture. What duo wrote the movies Fargo, Raising Arizona, and Blood Simple?
Joel and Ethan Coen.
Yes. I've never heard of Blood Simple. Is that earlier or recent?
That was their first movie. That was the first movie.
All right, yellow wedge. Who was the first female U.S. Speaker of the House? Chris.
Nancy Pelosi.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And purple wedge. What comic strip character shares a name with a Muddy Rock festival? Colin.
Woodstock.
Yes. Yeah. From Peanuts. What kind of bird is Woodstock? Do we know? I mean,
canary?
He's yellow. But he has like a crazy hair.
Yeah.
He's got hair like Calvin from Calvin and
Hobbes. No one knows.
What kind of a dog is Snoopy? No one knows.
Beagle.
Beagle.
You just got beagle trolled.
Yeah. All right, green wedge for science. What company was originally known as Minnesota Mining and Manufacturing? Everybody.
3M.
Oh, I was going to say M&M's.
M&M.
We got rid of one of the M's.
Yeah, don't ask what happened to that third M. M's.
Yeah. Last question, orange wedge. My Name is Earl star Jason Lee, also from Mallrats, and many other movies, was a professional athlete before becoming an actor. What was his sport?
He's not. He's not a big guy.
Like baseball or something, maybe?
That's not a bad guess. I don't think it was
You
like...
can call it a sport.
Oh, you can call it.
Chris.
Ultimate Frisbee.
No.
Golf?
No. No.
Swimming?
He was a professional skateboarder.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, that... Huh. Okay.
Well, good job, brains.
Wow,
and
thanks.
We have one Lobetrotter fact from one of our fans. Lobetrotters are our fan club members, and Ginger Turner wrote us a very cool mnemonic for remembering when... for the very specific function of remembering when J.R.R. Tolkien died.
Oh, okay.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Tolkien, author of The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, died in 1973. Mm-hmm. And how you can remember this, Ginger said, is reversing the numbers in the ring poem in the book. So the poem...
The
poem. Three rings for the elven kings under the sky, mm-hmm. seven for the dwarf lords in the Hall of Stone, nine for mortal men doomed to die, and one for the dark lord on his dark throne.
Ah.
And reverse, you know, it's 3791 reverses 1973, which is the year Tolkien died.
I appreciate the mnemonic, but there is no way that that would help me. Like, I have better luck just remembering 1973.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But it's fun that it's connected to the poem. And there's a, and she wrote bonus somewhat related fact. It's kind of macabre. C.S. Lewis, also famous author of the Narnia series, died on November 22nd, 1963. Which is the same day as JFK was assassinated.
Oh.
Fun fact.
And then it goes, and then she goes, thanks, Karen, Dana, Colin, and Chris.
Death, death, death. Bye.
Enjoy the show.
Yeah, that was good.
Well, thank you, Ginger.
Thanks,
Ginger.
I don't think I'll forget those years.
I think I'll remember that.
Yeah. I like your handwriting.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah. Thank you. So let's start the show this week. Big exciting news inspired by you, Chris. our theme for this episode. Do you even remember? I feel like you should.
Jerks throughout history. What is
this? Oh, no, I prepared for the wrong show. Yes. Oh,
squishy podcast hosts.
Well, I guess I can announce this to all of the Good Job Brain listeners, because my mom knows. I wouldn't want to tell you before her. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yes.
We're close enough. Close.
But Regina, my wife, and I are going to have a baby.
Yay!
Mostly Regina is going to have
it. How did it get there?
I'll stand around. How is Babby formed? I really have no idea. I was just informed. Yeah, and so
man,
we're very
listeners
excited.
Of the show have witnessed your wedding.
That's right.
Now, like you're not preggers. Your wife is preggers.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so they've seen me go from...
It's not junior.
Yep.
This week we decided... And also, actually, we had a really fun... Sorry, we had a really
We're
going
to be pod parents.
Pod parents.
Yep. Your pod father.
Pod mom,
Yep.
A couple episodes ago, Dana had a really good quiz from a baby shower you went to.
Yeah.
So this week we decided to talk about kids and baby stuff.
So, let me tell you a little story. At some point in the mid to late 2000s, a very angry man stormed into a Target store just outside of Minneapolis, Minnesota, and he demanded to see the manager. And he was, in the words of the New York Times, which reported this story, he was clutching a stack of coupons that had been sent to his home, addressed to his high school-age daughter, his young teenage daughter. And he said, "What are you people sending to my children? My daughter is in high school, and you are mailing her coupons for baby clothes and baby cribs and baby formula. What are you trying to encourage the young people to get pregnant because of hot deals at Target on these items?" Now, a more level-headed person...
Because that's why kids are fooling around.
That's why. Because of the deal. Now, a more level-headed person who does not get angry at his junk mail and storm in a fit of rage into the local Target might have thought, oh, maybe they just... This is just the mailing list for everybody.
Yeah.
Maybe they didn't just send it... Like, it's not hand-addressed to his daughter. Maybe it's just what everybody got, and my daughter's on the mailing list. And he really thought that they had targeted his daughter with these specific coupons in an effort to...
encourage her to
teen pregnancy. Sure. So, of course, the manager... You know, the customer is always right. This guy might be a little loopy, but the manager apologizes profusely. "I'm so sorry, sir. I don't know why these were sent to your daughter. I'm very sorry, sir. You know... Please give us your business later." And then the manager actually follows up a few days later, calls again. Really good customer service. He's just like, "Hi, this is, you know, so-and-so, the manager at Target. You know, we had the incident a few days ago, and I really just, again, wanted to express my apologies." And the dad is like, "Yeah, about that? My daughter is actually... pregnant." So the dad apologizes.
That's good.
And as it turns out, the dad was half right, because Target did know that his daughter was pregnant, and Target absolutely sent her those coupons because Target knew that she was gonna have a baby. Gee, how did Target know? Well, let's take a trip back. Let's take a trip back to small town America, as we always love to do. When you would visit your local store, you were on a first name basis, probably with the guy behind the counter. And, you know, if you bought something, you knew it and they knew it. They were sort of they were the holder of the town's secrets.
Right.
Yeah. Right? They knew what everybody in the town was up to, because you had to come to them to buy whatever it was. So if you needed cream for your bunions, I don't know, bunions sound like an old-timey thing.
That's sure.
Bunion is like bone disalignment.
Sure,
like,
yeah.
You don't put cream on
Well, back in the
well,
day,
that's why they were selling
did.
So much cream.
I thought you were going to say hemorrhoid cream. So yeah. You're like, if you know, need cream for your butt. I was like, butts?
Yeah, no. So let's say hemorrhoid cream. Okay. Yeah, so I mean, you know, you need that. So the guy behind the counter, he was the keeper of all of the secrets. Now, of course, in the modern day, and if they were smart, they'd try to anticipate your needs, you know, knowing what kind of a customer you were. The modern day Colosso Mart, big box store, impossible.
Too many people,
millions of customers, different teenager behind the register every day you go up there. There's no way they could do it. But If you're paying with a credit card,
yep,
then you are handing them your data. You are handing them every single thing that you've ever bought, and then you're giving them your name. And they have all of that data. Mm-hmm. It's there. They've got it. The question is, you have all of this data, what are you going to do with it? You can analyze it after the fact. You can look at, you know, what items do different customers buy together, sure, you know, so we'll have a sale on both those things, or we'll put them closer together or further apart.
Smart.
Right. I mean, you know, they have it all and people are just handing it to them, so they can kind of use that data. But the holy grail for Target was, can we predict what you're going to buy in the future based on past purchases? The real holy grail was, can we figure out based on your current purchases if you are going to have a baby? Because as soon as people have babies, they need a whole bunch of stuff.
Man,
They're going to start spending all kinds of money. And what people were doing was going to people saying, hey, do you have a baby? Shop here. But if they could go to you beforehand and say, hey, are you gonna have a baby? Shop here. Then they're hitting you while you're still pregnant, right? Yep, so they can get to you potentially first. And what happens is when you have that big life change, they have the opportunity to bring you in and make you a customer, not just for the baby stuff, but everything else, you know, because you're already going there for your baby stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
You got to pick a baby stuff place.
So what are these items?
What are these clues? So basically, Target had an in-house statistician, and this is the guy who was profiled by the New York Times and this big thing. And they asked him, like, you know, is this possible? And he put a prediction model together. So he started with, you know, besides the credit card, you know, information, people would voluntarily give info to Target. So, for example, they would set up their baby registry at Target, and that involves giving them your name and all the stuff you're going to buy. So he kind of starts there. And he doesn't just look at what's on that list, but he looks at, okay, well, the people that set this up, you know, what else have they purchased? Unscented lotion, unscented soap, cotton balls, vitamin supplements, cocoa butter. People who started buying these things, he could ascertain if they really stepped up their purchases of them over a period of time.
Something's
happening. He figures,
happening.
You know what, I think that they're pregnant. Not only that, he worked on this model. This model got so good that not only could he figure out if a customer was pregnant, he could take a stab at their due date. He could get it to
how far in advance they would start buying.
Get it to within a couple of months. Because
magic of data,
start,
man.
Yeah.
That's the magic here, is that you've got thousands and thousands and thousands of people, and you can look through the historical data. Yeah.
Right. So now, okay, so now they've got a model, and they have figured out they can predict when someone's due date is, and they have their address, and they have their information, and they can start sending them promotions that are geared towards this. So what do they do? What do? You put together a coupon book that's like, hey, congratulations on your baby. Consider shopping at Target for all of this baby stuff. Here's some great deals for you. This turns out to be the worst possible idea because people got freaked out.
It's so scary. It would be so scary, right?
How do you know I'm pregnant? I didn't tell anybody I'm pregnant. How are you sending this thing telling me, hey, here you got a bun in the oven?
My father doesn't know, but Target knows.
Right, exactly. So they tried it on a very small scale. They kind of did an, you know, A-B test, and that was the A, and that did not work. but this is what they did. They're like, oh, here's a coupon book from Target. And then it's like, here's a deal on blank CDRs. Here's a deal on diapers. Here's a deal on whiskey. Here's a deal on baby formula. Where
so they kind of scatter it.
Yeah, it was heavily, heavily baby stuff themed, but with enough other completely unrelated items
that
in there.
Think,
this has been a colossal success for them.
Wow.
Like billions with a B. Like, that is how much more money they are now making. They don't like break it out, you know, in their reports, but like, it's been pointed out that like, they have huge revenue increases, and they will call out like, we're doing really well in the mom and baby department. It's funny, there was, I couldn't really independently research this, but they note in the New York Times article, like, for some reason, people get into habits with their shopping. They just go to the same place, they buy the same stuff, right? If there is a major life event, like you get married, you move in with someone, you get divorced, you know, you have a baby, you graduate from school, like when you have a major psychological, like, life event happen to you, that is the moment where you might actually also start totally changing your shopping behavior.
Going to
new stores, buying new things you haven't bought before. There was something in there about, like, when people get married, they start buying different coffee. Like, just weird stuff like that.
Oh, it's compromise coffee, right?
It's like, or his and her coffee.
Where you're just like, oh, that wouldn't have been the coffee I picked, but I think the other person likes it, and I think they did it too. And it's like, all right, we'll just pick the...
Oh, Henry.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it is about predicting major life changes and trying to capitalize on that opportunity, because the business is going to go to somebody. How do you get to go to you?
I have a quiz for you guys about children who were nominated and won, or nominated and lost Academy Awards. The youngest Academy Award nominees and winners.
All right.
Which comes up in trivia.
A lot.
Yep.
Yeah, enough that we should know the answers to these questions.
Okay. All right.
A little caveat. You have to listen really carefully for category and, like, whether nominee or winner, because there are different qualifiers, but there's a pool of kids you should know about.
Okay.
They're watching you when you sleep.
There's a whole pool of kids.
Yeah.
Pool's full of kids.
Get them out of the pool.
I've been in a pool full of kids, and I can tell you,
water is salty.
No, don't submerge your head.
Oh, that's right, because you used to be a camp counselor.
I did,
right?
I did. And I don't think we were the first ones to do this, but we would tell the kids every year there's a special chemical in the pool that will change color if they pee in the pool.
So people will know, right?
Well, hopefully, so everyone would know. There'd be a bright red cloud around you.
I was in the pool once, and this girl was like, wait a minute, I have to go to the bathroom. I was like, oh, okay. And then I saw her get out and then just walk to another area of the pool and get back in. And I was like,
pool of kids.
But we mean a metaphorical pool. Right.
All right. First question. Who was the first child winner of an Academy Award? Everybody.
Shirley Temple. It was a non-competitive Oscar.
Junior. It was a juvenile.
Right.
It was an achievement award.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. She won when she was 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
A lifetime achievement award.
Yeah, right. It's all downhill from here, kid.
No, lifetime achievement.
No, but
it's
it was
like a special achievement. But it wasn't her versus other kids, and she won. It was
they created it just to honor her.
They felt weird about nominating her for an actual Academy Award because she was 6 years old. But
right.
Yeah.
She's so good.
She did such a good job. Mm. Anyway, all right. In 2002, at the age of 12, this girl became the youngest ever Oscar nominee for Best Actress. She held this title until 2013, when another actress took the honor of the youngest person nominated.
Who was the one actress?
Who was the one in 2002? And then who was the one in 2013?
Lead actress?
Best actress.
Best actress.
Okay. Yeah, not
so
supporting.
That's lead.
Okay. Yeah. 2002, youngest
okay. Colin Jost.
That's too late. I was thinking it was Natalie Portman, but that's too late.
I say Keisha... the whale rider. Keisha Knight.
Oh, you're so close.
Oh.
You're thinking of Rudy from the Cosby Show.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Keisha Knight-Pulliam versus Keira Knightley. But, yeah.
Keisha Castle Hughes.
Yeah.
Castle, not Knight. Yeah.
Knight, okay.
Oh, so close.
Wow. Keisha Castle Hughes.
And it was overtaken.
Yes, in 2013.
Oh, is that by Kavenzhané Wallace?
Kavenzhané Wallace.
Right. Yes, Kavenzhané Wallace.
Beast of the Southern Wild.
Yeah, she was 9. So
cute. So cute.
All right. The youngest person nominated for an Academy Award ever was Justin Henry, who was nominated for an Oscar when he was 8.
Hmm.
What movie was he in?
Justin Henry?
Yes.
Oh!
8.
Oh!
What's that?
Isn't that E.T.?
No.
No.
Wait, for what category?
That was Henry Thomas.
Here's the thing. Have we heard of this movie?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh, yes. Right.
Okay.
To Kill a Mockingbird.
It was Kramer versus Kramer.
Oh!
Yeah. He was young Kramer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Last question. Put these people in order from oldest to youngest at the time of their nomination for an Oscar.
Okay.
They were all nominated for supporting actress.
Okay.
All right. We have Tatum O'Neill. We have Jodie Foster. Anna Paquin and Abigail Breslin.
Right. Oldest to youngest?
Mm-hmm.
Oldest, I believe oldest was Jodie Foster. I think she was 15. I think Tatum O'Neal was the youngest. 11. Mm-hmm. She was at the time, she was the youngest. I think Tatum O'Neal was 11 or 10, and then Anna Paquin was 9. At the time of their
nomination? Here's the thing. So
Anna Paquin was the youngest in the movie she appeared in, but when she won the award, it's
the movie hadn't come out for a while.
Right.
She was the youngest. Tatum O'Neal, I think, was like a year older than she was, and so I would have to go with Jodie Foster, Abigail Breslin, Tatum O'Neal, Anna Paquin.
Yeah. I say switch the last two for me.
Oh, no, okay. I agree with Chris. I think that's the, yeah.
So it was Jodie Foster, who was 14 years and 83 days old.
For Taxi Driver.
For Taxi Driver, yes. Then came Anna Paquin for The Piano, who was 11 years old and 200 days. Mm. Yeah, it got down to days.
Okay.
Because the next person was Abigail Breslin, Little Miss Sunshine, who is 10 years old and 284 days. She was almost 11. Mm-hmm. She was like 100 days out from 11 or so. And then came Tatum O'Neal for Paper Moon.
Okay.
Tatum O'Neal was the youngest, and she's held this record for 40 years.
Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Good job, you guys.
So, of course, in this baby, kid, child, offspring episode, I want to talk about non-human babies and offsprings and maybe a little bit of a nightmare animal later. Awesome. But before that...
That means yes. Yeah, that means we're going to get the nightmare
animal. Not a little bit.
Not maybe.
There will be.
Yeah. It will haunt your dreams.
And before I talk about the Harris three-spot moth, I want to share with you guys. You know how like we talked about in the show many times, like, groups of animals have names.
Sure, right. A parliament of owls.
Yeah. Was a Roomba of snakes.
Right.
So they're also very specific baby names for different animals.
Oh, sure.
Puppy. Pup. Kitten for cats.
Calf.
So here I have a list of interesting names for baby animals that we don't really see every day. Okay. I think they're funny. So cow, you said calf, right? Calf is a baby cow. There is another name for a motherless calf. A specific name. And I didn't know. I came across this. I was like, is this real?
Mm-hmm.
It's doggy.
Like get along little doggy?
Yeah, like get along little doggy.
D-O-G-I-E.
Yeah, like in the old Western songs. Yeah.
Oh, so they're not talking about doggies?
Little orphan cows.
Little cows. So it's an orphan. Interesting. Baby cow.
They're the same. Makes much more sense now.
Right.
Well, we know baby chickens are called chicks. Yeah. There's also specific young girl chick and young boy chick.
Huh.
Okay.
A pullet for a young girl chick, hen, and a cockerel.
I've heard these names.
I didn't know what they meant. Yeah, interesting.
Pullet and cockerel.
Cockerel.
Pullet and cockerel. A young eel is called an elver.
You guys are all
slimy and gross.
I know.
But they're babies.
It's a cute word, yeah.
Oh, yeah, baby animals are all...
Yeah, all. Well, also all babies are slimy and gross, so that's fine.
That's true.
Yeah, at one point.
This one, maybe because English is my second language, I didn't know. A baby fish is fry.
Small fry.
And I was like, that I always thought like small fry was like an actual potato fry.
Oh,
and it's
like,
very small.
The little brown one, I don't really care about that.
Fry is a which is funny because another name for a young fish is fingerling. And I think of fingerling potatoes. So it's all like potatoes in my head. A young hare, a baby hare, is a leveret.
Oh, that's a good word.
Leveret.
These are great
words. How do you spell that one?
Yeah.
L-E-V-E-R-E-T.
That's a good Scrabble word. That one. Those letters leveret. Will come up.
Yeah. That's a really good one.
Yeah. Young oyster, baby oyster, is a spat. I think it might be in the Alice in Wonderland poem. So peacock is very funny because peacock is the animal peacock.
Yep.
Is really referring to the boy.
Male, right.
Yeah. So it's a hen. And of course, their baby is a pea chick. So cute.
Not a chickpea.
Right. A pea chick.
Pea chick.
A swan baby.
A cygnet. Cygnet. Yeah.
Yep.
Cygnet.
All right, here we go. Baby animals are usually really cute. And I don't know if you... Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever shared this on the show, but you guys know. My diet is very strange. I'm not really a vegetarian. I'm an ugly-tarian.
Ugly-tarian.
I eat animals. I don't eat animals I find cute. I eat animals I find ugly. So I'll eat shrimp, but I won't eat ducks because I think ducks are cute. Mm-hmm. Cows and pigs are cute. Most mammals are cute.
Yeah.
And the thing is, if the baby version is cute, then I will not eat that animal. So... Most baby animals are very cute. Not this one. So I want to introduce you this species called the Harris three-spot moth. It's just a you know, kind of like a standard moth that has three brown spots on it. So the Harris three-spot moth, the caterpillar of it, it's supposed to look like bird poop.
Okay.
It's supposed to look like discarded animals.
What color?
It's brown with white spots white colorations that look like bird poop. Right. Or poop.
Saves it from predators.
So yeah, exactly. It's a camouflage technique. And even the shape, you think of caterpillar as like a plump, long thing. No, it's weird and nightmare and gnarly. And it has like these weird, not thorns, or the spindles that come out. Mm-hmm. It's gross. As caterpillars, they molt, right? They have to replace their casing and skin. And what this caterpillar does is it keeps the head skin, and it would save it on one of the spindles coming out from the body. Multiple of them.
Okay.
Various molts. So there'd be a caterpillar with three dried head molts.
Like heads on pikes up
by a cow. Like heads on pikes. A, they have camouflage going for them.
Uh-huh.
B, if they do get threatened, they'll thrash around and it looks like the heads are moving and it's like kind of like violent jerks and it might scare people away.
That is, yeah.
That's pretty freaky.
That's pretty freaky.
I need to see a picture now.
Well, there's video of its thrashing, so have fun with that.
Let me ask you guys, how old were you guys when you had your first jobs? And I'm not talking about like lemonade stand. I'm talking about you did some work and someone, not your parents, gave you money for that work.
Taxes were taken out of it, maybe?
We'll fudge on taxes. Okay. But you got
money have been taken out of it.
Money for work performed. Yeah. How old
13.
Were you?
16. Oh, 13, huh?
13.
Yeah. Wow.
I was a tutor.
16.
Yeah, I think I was 16 as well. Okay, so all around the same. I want you guys to imagine starting your life in the working world at age 4.
Whoa.
Just
I would have been terrible at anything.
Yeah. And we're not talking about Shirley Temple here.
No, we are not talking about the cushy life of a Hollywood actor. Once upon a time, I mean, not that long ago, it was totally commonplace. Mm-hmm. It was accepted. It was even encouraged to have children as young as 4 entering the workforce.
To do what?
Well,
what
to do lots of things. And, you know, in Europe and America, before modern labor laws started appearing in, you know, in the 1800s generally, there was virtually no regulation at all around child labor. Mm-hmm. Virtually none. And, I mean, I should say, you know, there are obviously many places in the world today where there still is child labor. The main difference between now and, you know, 200 years ago is that now child labor is pretty much universally condemned. It still happens. It's still there. Most people don't consider it a good thing. Back in the good old days, or bad old days, there was a lot of work to be done everywhere. And you'd find all the hands you could do it. Sadly, the primary advantage of child laborers there have been two. One is they'll work cheap. Work more cheap than adults. And the second is their size.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, going back to like 15, 16, 17, 1800s, a lot of the roles for child laborers were because they were small and could get in places that full-size adults could not. It was very common to have children working in mines and coal mines gemstones, right? Because they can get into tight little spots. As bad as it is for your health to be a coal miner as a grown-up, it's
when your lungs are still developing,
substantially worse to be down there as a child. As you say, your body is still developing, you know, all of your systems are still developing. You know, you could be burned out of a life as a miner, as a kid, by the time you were a teenager. You know, you could be just so many ailments stacked up that you're done. Kids would have rickets just because you're underground all day. You're not exposed to light.
What's rickets?
It's vitamin D deficiency because you're not getting exposed to sunlight. It makes your bones weak and brittle and they can become malformed and your body's still growing and you're underground harvesting coal. My first vision of a chimney sweep is from Mary Poppins.
Probably
a lot of people. I assure you that real life chimney sweeps were nowhere near as jolly as their film counterparts.
They go around singing about it afterwards.
Yeah. In real life, particularly in England, where there was a lot more coal and chimney sweeping, your average chimney sweeping crew would have several young boys as part of the crew, and they were called climbing boys. And their job was to climb inside the chimneys and scrub them out in places that a grown-up couldn't reach. There's some reports of boys as young as 3.5.
What?
I mean, just imagine trying to explain to a 3.5-year-old this is the work that you need to do.
Yeah.
It said that sometimes to keep the climbing boys from slacking off, you know, while they're inside there, it was not uncommon for crew bosses to light small fires near the grates to send heat and smoke up the flue, kind of like, hey, keep working, don't slack off here. It's going to get really uncomfortable. You might be retired as a climbing boy by the time you were 12, and you might be stooped over and bruised and hunched to show for it. You might think that, okay, well, you know, some of the advances of the Industrial Revolution would bring about better conditions, right? Yes and no. Yes, you are outside of the mines. You're not underground. You're not inside a chimney. You might be in a factory. But inside a factory was dangerous, dangerous work.
Machinery. Yeah.
And the job for a lot of children in factories early on was runners, was one term for them. Say you're working in a textile factory and there's a snag or a breakage or something on the giant machines. You would send little kids in there to root out inside the machinery because they can fit inside the gears and around the little tight spots. To fix whatever problem there was. It was tough, tough, dangerous work. Not all these children were volunteers. A lot of them were very poor. A lot of them were orphans. A lot of them were pressed into service. A lot of them were stolen children for the purpose of working in factories. Until 1814 in England, there was no law outright forbidding the theft of children.
What?
Yes. There is a story of a woman named Elizabeth Salmon who abducted a child in 1802. She was only charged, once she was discovered, she was only charged with theft of the girl's clothes, because that was the only part of her act that was technically illegal.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy to imagine some of these things that seem like common sense.
Well, nothing is a law until you make it a law.
It's true. Yeah. It's true.
Yeah. Like, I guess we have to talk about this.
Is a thing now. People are... there was a little bit of relief with the Factory Act of 1844, which reduced the number of hours that a child could work. Didn't ban, it could reduce. Which basically said that you could no longer have things like kids working 12 to 14 hour shifts in some factories and workplaces 6 days a week.
Kids got mandatory cigarette breaks.
Whiskey breaks.
They would probably be glad to have the cigarette breaks. So yeah, you would bring it down to a much more respectable, you know, 8 or 10 hour day, maybe only 4 to 5 days a week as a child. Thankfully, as both Europe and America moved, you know, toward the end of the 1800s and into the early 1900s, child labor was, you know, bit by bit reduced and reduced and eventually pretty much outlawed in all cases, you know, and there are weird little exceptions like actors today. Today, there are really strict regulations on child labor.
That's why on like TV shows like Full House, they get twins to play one girl.
That's absolutely right. Because they'll have rules that any given child under a certain age can only be on set for, you know, 20 minutes. Let's say at a time, or working only a certain number of hours a day. So yeah, this is why they'll get multiples, twins or triplets, even if you're lucky, to play young kids in TV and movies and things like that. So as much as I grumbled about having to go get a job when I was in high school, I'm glad I did not have to start when I was five.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break. A word from our sponsor. And you're listening to Good Job Brain. This week we're talking about babies and children and offsprings.
Whether you are currently a child or used to be a child or have children, you've probably encountered Dr. Seuss books. This is not the story of Dr. Seuss. This is a quiz. It is a quiz baby that I have birthed and will bestow upon you.
That sounds bad.
I want to know, you all know the Dr. Seuss books. I want to know how well you know some of these Dr. Seuss books. All right, well, we'll see.
All right.
A lot of these have entered into popular culture. So each of you have a notepad and a pen.
Okay.
And that is how we will play this. So you guys will write down your answers. If you're following along at home, I'll let you know what everyone has written down, and we'll see who gets it right. If anyone.
If this were Roald Dahl, it'd be a different matter. But
I
did not grow up.
That is another quiz for another episode.
Yeah.
Another
time.
So, for this first question, I'm going to give you a quote, and there will be a blank, and you will write down the word that goes in the blank.
All right.
Here's the quote. This one has a little star. This one has a little car. Say, what a lot of blank there are.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org.
paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Calling all kids in the car. Brittany and Meredith here from the chart-topping Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast. Are you dreading another silent car ride with the fam? We've got the cure. Three rounds of fresh trivia every single week. Movies, music, even science and Disney. We've got something for every trivia buff in the car. No more crickets chirping on those long journeys. The Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast is your secret weapon for connecting and laughing with kids of all ages. Teens, toddlers, adults, it doesn't matter. Spark their curiosity and challenge their brains with every episode. New episodes drop weekly wherever you get your podcasts. Search for the Family Road Trip Trivia Podcast and turn those car rides into epic adventures.
Karen is locked in. Dana is locked in. Colin does not have anything. Say, what a lot of blank there are. One has a little star, and one has a little car. Colin, your time is up. So, Karen says fish. Dana says
ones. Ones.
Ones. Okay. Mm-hmm. And,
books.
Books. Karen is correct. Yeah. This is from one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish. Yeah. All right.
I thought it was ones because it would, that would also work with the
It would. It would. With Dr. Seuss. Yeah, of course. And then something went bump. How that bump made us jump is a line from a book. What was the thing? What was the bump? What made the bump that made them jump? And then something went bump. How that bump made us jump. What went bump? Karen's locked in. Dana's locked in. Colin is locked in. Colin says, who? Dana says, the cat in the hat. And Karen says, the cat in the hat. It is the cat in the hat. All right, here we go. On the 15th of May, in the jungle of Newell, in the heat of the day, in the cool of the pool, he was splashing, enjoying the jungle's great joys, when blank the blank heard a small noise. Mm. We have two blanks. Oh. Blank the blank. Colin is locked in. Karen is locked in.
Dana is locked in.
Colin says Horton and elephant. Karen says Horton and elephant. Dana says Horton the elephant. It is Horton the elephant.
Yeah.
The small noise he was hearing is the
hoo.
All right.
I like the cool of the pool. That's
the
a
cool
nice...
of the pool. It was a nice opening.
Yeah.
Here is a few rhyming lines. Just tell me what book these are from. Chicks with bricks come. Chicks with blocks come. Chicks with bricks and blocks and clocks come.
Whoa.
Hey, all right. head out of the gutter.
Say it again, actually.
Back in the pool full of kids. All right, mm-hmm. Here. Chicks with bricks come. Chicks with blocks come. Chicks with bricks and blocks and clocks come. It is a bit of a tongue twister. It is a book of, very specifically, tongue twisters.
Dancing on a razor with that one.
Karen is locked in. Dana is locked in. Colin is locked in. Dana says, I don't know. Colin says, hop on pop. And Karen says, green eggs and ham. The answer is fox in socks.
Yes!
Wow, you're celebrating.
I
remember reading this one, but I just couldn't remember.
Okay.
I was like,
fox in socks.
Yeah.
Okay.
And knocks on box
knocks on box, sort of stuff.
In How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the Grinch steals from the residents of Whoville three types of food that are called out by name. Name two of them. If that's too hard, name one of them. But two
are they? Are they normal food or is it made up food?
He steals three types of food. All of them are evocative of a certain type of food. There is one specific line where he's talking about all the things that the Grinch is stealing.
I'm trying to think of what rhymes with other things.
Three things are named. Yes, that's a way to do it. Yep. Dana has a couple of foods written down. Karen has some foods written down. Colin weighs in with jellies and jams. Karen weighs in with cake, cookies, and candy. And Dana says turkey and ham. You have all failed horribly.
Yeah. What was it?
He steals from them who pudding.
Okay.
He steals the very well-known roast beast. And the Grinch even takes their last can of who hash.
Got it.
Here is another opening rhyming couplet from a book. On the faraway island of Salamisand, blank the blank was king of the pond.
Ooh.
Oh, man.
On the faraway island of Salamisand, blank the blank was king of the pond. Karen is locked in.
I can picture that page.
Oh, man.
I can picture it. I just don't remember.
Colin is having some trouble.
Just put something.
Dana is locked in. Colin, you are out of time. Karen says, don't know. Dana says, can you read that for me?
Either Myrtle or Yrtle the turtle.
Oh, Yrtle the turtle.
It is Yrtle.
Yrtle.
Yes.
Yes. So,
good.
Sadly, no points. All half point. Half
50%.
Point for Dana. Thanks. Yep. 0.5.
that's 0.5 more than we got.
All that I've noticed, except my own feet, was a horse and a wagon on blank blank. All that I've noticed, except my own feet, was a horse and a wagon on blank blank.
It's not right, but it rhymes.
Everyone locked in. Dana says Sesame Street. Colin says, can you read that for
Mulberry
me?
Mulberry Street.
Mulberry Street. And Karen says Crazy Street. Yeah. And you did need to get both for 1 point. The winner is Colin. The book is To Think That I Saw It on Mulberry Street.
Oh, Dr. Susan's
first book for children.
Cool. Oh, was it?
Yeah. All right. And the last question. Let's talk about green eggs and ham. In the dish, green eggs and ham, that one character keeps trying to get the other character to eat during the entire book, what actual parts of the food are green?
Oh.
All right, Karen is locked in. Everybody is locked in. Karen says yolk. Colin says yolks and pork chop. And Dana says egg yolks. The person who is most correct is Colin.
Oh, the
because
ham
the
is
egg
also...
yolks are green, and also the ham is green.
That's what I was thinking.
It's
I
not.
Was like,
it's yeah. As it turns it... out, it's green eggs and ham
and green okay. eggs.
Green eggs and ham, not just green eggs and regular ham. Ham.
Green eggs and yes, green ham. Indeed. Yeah. Yeah.
That was tricky. That was trickier than
right?
I thought
right,
going
right.
in. Yeah.
And then you hear the answers like, oh, yeah, that.
Yep.
I mean, there's probably a lot of parents with small children out there that ran the board on that.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I was going it's easy to write poetry when, like, you just get to the part where you have to put the rhyming word in, then
you
just
make up
a
word.
Right, yeah. Yeah. He dined out a lot on that.
Are you looking for a podcast that your whole family can enjoy that asks the deep philosophical questions like, do trees fart?
If you are, then you'll love Tumble, a science podcast for kids. I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Marshall. Join us as we explore stories of science discovery, from butts to animals, dinosaurs, astronomy, and everything in between.
You'll love these stories, and you'll learn something new.
Find and follow Tumble Science Podcast for Kids wherever you get your podcasts, or at sciencepodcastforkids.com.
So, Chris, as a father-to-be, you will no doubt soon be learning, of course, the joys of various kids' books, as we just went over.
Indeed.
You will also, I am sure, be learning the joy/pain of kids' music. Lullabies, you know, just the same old lullabies.
Them.
They're great the first time, the first 10 times, but as a parent, if you have to hear some of these things hundreds of times, they can get a little old. So what I think is a brilliant stroke of music marketing and music selling, there are companies that now create lullaby and baby versions of normal adult
baby.
Rock songs.
Okay.
Yes, Rockabye Baby. Rockabye Baby. This is not an official plug or anything, but I have taken several Rockabye Baby covers of very well-known rock songs. As Karen said, they're all instrumental. So for me, part of the fun with these kind of songs is listening to at what point do I like, oh, I recognize
yeah,
this song.
Yeah, I imagine
I know
it'll be
it.
Like sort of familiar, but you won't be able to place it without a little bit more help.
And they're really well done. Once you hear them, like, for me, I
all
can't
right.
help but smile when
oh,
I hear these.
The arrangements are fantastic.
The arrangements are great. I'll start us off here with one that I think is fairly straightforward. So keep in mind, these are all very famous, very well-known rock songs.
Okay.
All right, here we go. So here's the first sample, just kind of give you guys a flavor. Tell me what song this is.
You Yeah.
Did you get it?
Karen.
Fell in love with a girl by the White Stripes.
That is.
Fell in love with a girl by the White Stripes. I'm so glad that I have no idea what that song is because, I've never heard that song before. Oh. So I'm listening to this going, oh man, I hope that, this isn't a familiar song that I know.
Right.
Because then
I want to play it for you. I'm like, do you really know?
The video was made out of Legos?
Oh. Nope. Okay.
Yeah, kind of the first White Stripes hit song, right? Yeah.
If he hasn't heard it, he hasn't.
All right.
I'm just saying, relieved.
Okay.
Here we go. Next one. Tell me what song this is.
Queen, We Will Rock You.
Yes, We Will Rock You by Queen.
It really does. They really are. They're slow.
It's so slow down.
Yeah.
They do. They'll change the tempo on some of them.
And it just and not only that, but it's just like I know We Will Rock You, but it's just hard to get it. Yeah.
Here we go. A punk classic.
Okay.
This is I Want to Be Sedated.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yes. The Ramones. I Want to Be Sedated.
Man.
A very sedate version.
Quite, yes.
Here we go. Another hard rocking classic. What song is this? Karen.
Paradise City with the grass is green.
Yes, Paradise City by
Guns N' Roses.
Guns N' Roses, that's right. One of my personal favorite rock songs here. Karen.
Where is my mind?
Yes.
Known as the Fight Club song.
Yes, as seen in Fight Club. Yes, Where is My Mind by the Pixies.
Such a good song.
I mean, if you guys like this lullaby stuff, there are so many kind of instrumental covers of rock songs.
I love the wedding ones with the violin.
Yeah, the Vitamin String Quartet does a whole selection. They have all Fleetwood Mac, all wedding, all
You're right,
Pixies.
It is very much in the same vein.
And there's also brass band interpretations, too, are really big. And also, banjo bluegrass. Hmm. I have a whole album of brass band Daft Punk, which is really interesting.
That does sound interesting.
I love listening to, weird instrumental covers of songs you already know. And Where Is My Mind is always, it's always in one of these.
Huh.
It shows the strength of a lot of these songs that they can be, I think, deconstructed and reinterpreted, and they're still good songs. Yeah. All right, last one for your little punk music fan baby might enjoy hearing this. Mm-hmm.
Should I stay or should I go?
Yes, by the Clash.
Wow. Crazy.
Good job, guys.
You know what? I learned something today.
All right, and that's our show. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned a lot of stuff about babies and offspring, target data predictions, child actors and actresses, child labor, and also some cool names for baby animals that you might have not known. Mm-hmm. And you can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, and on our website, goodjobbrain.com, and check out our sponsor at Harry's, HARRYS.com. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.